Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
My tradition is one that values complexity. Fat books, long courses, PhDs. We genuflect before complexity. And yet, at least for the last week, I have become kind of on a simplicity kick. And I'm not talking about shedding all my worldly goods and redistributing to all of those who have suffered because I've benefited. But a simplicity of knowledge acquisition. And perhaps, because I think about the fact that there are, when we think about what really changes us, does a fat tome change us? Rarely. Does a long missive even change us? You know, how many, this is Sunday, so how many ministers, priests, rabbis, imams give sermons? And in the end, we kind of go get sleepy or half listen or try to listen and say we should do this, and then we go back to our daily lives. What's more likely to change us? Well, we ridicule the bumper sticker. Yet how many of us have actually had our behavior changed from, you know, do unrandom acts of kindness or whatever? I think a lot of us. And so I was thinking about ways in which we might change our lives through simplicity, something really simple. Well, we like anecdotes. We like stories. But it seems like every radio show does stories. What don't we do? Children's picture books. And yet there are, not in all of them, some of them are just designed to make you laugh. Nothing wrong with that. But in terms of, this show is supposed to be about career. So, you know, there are some children's picture books that actually both raise issues as well as teach lessons for grown-ups. And that's what I'm going to be doing next week on this show. I wanted to tease that. But today, even simpler is the metaphor or the analogy. So I've put together a collection of 13 analogies and metaphors, real simple things like, you know, two-liners that have changed some of my clients' lives or the way in which they've pursued their career or whatever. So I will share them with you. Then I will invite you to call in and either comment on them or, as always, I honor your request for what I call a 3-minute workover if your career is in the toilet or even if it's in that pinnacle. If there's an issue you or someone you love has, I like to try to help you with what I call a 3-minute workover. But before we do that, 13 analogies and metaphors to help your career. The shopping mall. I'll start with a group of a few of them that focus on how to choose a career. There's a metaphor that works well for many of my clients called the shopping mall. I call it shopping mall. When you're looking for a career, it's like looking for an outfit in a shopping mall. It's fun to try a lot of stuff on, including accessories. But you needn't buy until something feels really good. Your credit card could stay in your wallet. And I think when people think of that as that discovery, not only is it a joyous, fun process, but the notion of accessorizing and tailoring, that you don't necessarily need to take a career off the shelf. I think about, for example, me being a career counselor. Most career counselors, their greatest expertise is listening well, facilitating, making clients feel good about themselves, maybe giving career tests. That ain't me. My best strength is I can think on my feet. I got a million ideas. And so I do listen, but I also will sometimes interrupt because my goal is to make the most of every session. I do give advice. I do give ideas. And so I've taken this off the on-the-rack suit called career counselor, and I've adapted it to fit who I am. And yeah, there's going to be a certain percentage of clients who I'm not a good fit. Great. They should not be buying my suit. Right, but there's another percentage of clients who say, "Thank God, somebody who's got this, who's different than a typical career counselor." So I invite you to think of that metaphor, the shopping mall metaphor, When you are a job seeker or a career seeker, you are looking through the mall and looking for something that will entice you enough to at least try it on. Your credit card's still in your purse, right? You try it on, have a good time, you accessorize it. Doesn't look great? Next. Fun. We'll go to the next store. Great way to think of it. And when you indeed are choosing a career, you needn't think about it just what's going to be off the shelf, but how could you tailor it and accessorize it to fit you? That's the first of the 13 metaphors, the shopping mall metaphor. The other one is a metaphor I like on choosing a career is a metaphor that can, an analogy to love. Even if you found what would really, in God's eyes, it's weird for me, this atheist, to say God's eye, but you know what I mean, in a cosmic scheme of things, you found the right career, you're probably not going to feel fully enamored of your choice right away. As with love or romance, you're unlikely to fall head over heels just when you meet your even your ideal romantic partner. You usually have to get involved, right? Get a little closer, so to speak. Or if I'm more graphic, you're not going to have an orgasm just looking at the person across the room. It's the same with a career. Unless you're 16, maybe. If I fill the room with people who love their career, most of them felt that way only after they had gotten into that career. They had tailored and accessorized it to their strengths and become expert. If they had waited to choose their career until they were in love with it, they might have been waiting for Godot. So another metaphor, analogy that I like to use with my clients that I think is helpful, between choosing career and love. You got to give it some time. And if you wait on the sidelines and not start to get involved with somebody, you'll probably wait forever. Next metaphor in choosing a career. Getting helicoptered down on top of a mountain. When you're considering a bunch of careers that seem, you know, roughly equal in desirability, your situation is like that of being dropped from a helicopter on top of a frigid mountain with a lot of paths leading downward. If you stay up there for very long, contemplating, well, which path should I take? You're going to die. It's frigid. You got to quickly look down each path and then pick the one that feels the most felicitous, that feels the best. Only then are you going to be able to discover whether it leads down to a sheer cliff, a gently descending path with meadows, or maybe even that there are better side paths that you couldn't have seen from the top. It's exactly that way with a career. After a fairly small amount of reading articles or Googling about that career, watching videos on job shadowing or interviewing somebody, it's usually wiser to pick a career and devote yourself to that than to wait for that eureka moment. Then you got to find the best training and over time, then again, tailor and accessorize your career to fit. But that metaphor, I think, is really fairly apt. When you are contemplating a bunch of career options, think of yourself as being helicoptered down on top of a frigid mountaintop. You can only take a little bit of time to look at a number of the paths before at least starting down one of the paths and then deciding whether you want to continue on it down, scrambling up, or maybe you'll be lucky, you'll see some even better side path you wouldn't have seen up front. Okay, so those are three metaphors for choosing a career. I've got also metaphors for landing the job, and metaphors for succeeding on the job and in life, but I think maybe this is a good time for me to give out the phone number. If you have either a comment about my choosing a career metaphors, or perhaps more importantly, if you or someone you love has got a career conundrum, I usually can help with what I call a 3-minute workover. The price is certainly right, zero, zippo, nada. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. By the way, I've got to thank Kevin Vance. Kevin Vance is my, he's filling in for Joanne Moore, my usual board operator today. Kevin does something that is incredibly valuable. He's absolutely looking at me and clearly paying attention to every word I'm saying. There's no audience here. And what that does is it forces me to kind of, I feel like I'm trying to be better than I normally would because I know there is a human being who's actually paying attention. So, Kevin Vance, thank you very much. The phone number, again, if you want a 3-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, metaphors on landing the job that hopefully will help you. I like to create the metaphor of matchmaking. throughout the job-seeking process, from the very first inquiry you make to an employer to the very last interview, your job is not to try to convince as many employers as possible to hire you. Your job is to find a good fit between your strengths and weaknesses and what that employer needs. That's what's going to maximize the chances of both of you being happy with each other, just like in love, just like in matchmaking. So, in every one of your contacts with the employer, from the first cover letter through the interviews, state your strengths and your weaknesses. That's not only going to facilitate finding a good match, it's going to make employers more likely to believe you're being honest when you're touting your strengths. So matchmaking analogy, I think, is a pretty good one for, and also first date, which is a related analogy. When you are on that interview, you're really on a first date. They're not just interrogating you. It's not the Inquisition. You're both checking each other out. Give out the phone number again. If you or someone you love wants a three-minute workover, here on Work with Marty Nemco, the phone number 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another metaphor that I like to use for landing a job is a video game. A lot of people think of job hunting as like this monstrous, terrible thing. It's dreadful. It's very helpful to think of it as a video game. You're enjoying the exploration, and yeah, you're going to meet monsters, you know, people who will put you down or you more often these days ignore you. But you're also going to probably encounter, if you're in the right world, you know, like in video games of these various worlds, if you're in the right world, you're probably going to find some fairy godmothers and mages and guides and all those good things. And, as in good video games, with persistence, you will find the treasure. It makes it more fun. Landing a job feels so, it's disgusting, landing a job. I'll do anything. I'd rather do anything. I want to eat a burrito. I'm not going to look for the job. But if you really think of it as a video game, I'm not going to say it's going to be as fun as, you know, hanging out with your friends, but it can help create the right mindset so you're not going to procrastinate it so much. Again, the phone number if you want a three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, to the phones. MB, welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hello.
Am I on the air?
You are.
Okay. Hi, Marty. I wanted to tell you that over 8 years ago, you encouraged me to go back to school, and I went back. I made the decision on July 4th to go back for prereqs in nursing, and I got into nursing school. I got into a master's entry program, did the whole nine yards. Now I am a complex case manager, and I have a question for you about, I'm sure this is a common problem for people on the job. They just feel like they've got way too many things to do in the day. And my mantra is, it takes the time it takes, because sometimes I just have to take longer with patients.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telephonic, and I do complex care management, coaching people on how to manage their conditions and stay out of the hospital and such. And I'm feeling like I'm kind of laboring under kind of a maybe an unrealistic expectation from management that I'm supposed to have 100 people, and I feel like I can hardly juggle 80 cases, keep all the balls in the air. And I'm just wondering what you can advise about caseload and feeling overwhelmed with people and feeling late getting back to people because more acute things jump on the front and center.
Okay. There are mathematically, it's a funny word to be using in this context, but mathematically, these are your only options. And so I'm going to ask you to write them down as I say them. And then I'm going to ask you to then report, tell me which of them are and are not desirable in your case.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, you could quit because the demands are too great. Number two, you could ask your boss for you're asking for 100. Here is what it takes. I really feel that I'd be compromising patient care if I did less. I'm as efficient as I can. I need you to lower my workload. That's two.
Mm-hmm.
Three is to be more time conscious, to have like a little Jiminy Cricket on your shoulder, asking yourself all the time, is this the most time effective way? Am I really doing this because it's fun? So the third option is to be more time effective.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth is to delegate. There may be some tasks that you don't do that well or that could be done almost as well by somebody else that you could delegate.
Right.
And then five is to work longer hours. Some people just, they cosmically feel that they would rather spend another 10 hours working at work, going slow and not rushing, even if it's taking, quote, work out of their hide, because it's cosmically, work and contribution is the most important thing. Those are the five. There are no other options.
Right.
Or getting some volunteer or intern to help you if somebody's not an existing mm-hmm. staff. So those are mathematically the only options that exist. I want you to now tell me for each of them whether it is or isn't a wise thing to do in your situation.
Okay. Well, number one, I wouldn't quit because I really love this work. Mm-hmm. This is the patient population I want to work with. And
not to another job.
Very
I mean,
rewarding.
I'm not asking
no.
you to change careers.
No.
But if they are unrealistic Simon Legree monsters that are making you work 100 when it really is only human to do 80, should you not find another job?
Well, I'll see if the other options work out for me.
Cool.
And I have mentioned to the boss that, for the type of stuff I'm doing, I do need a certain amount of time. It's not just, TikTok, dispatch them and, in 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
Right.
So I already talked about that. I may
And got nowhere? What was the response of your boss?
She said, she didn't really say about the number, but that the idea that there were a lot of cases that I'd opened that I thought I would have already gotten back to by now, but I've been so busy with new cases that I've got these overdues kind of stacking up. And she said, well, think of it like a waiting room, and you have to get to these people, or they're going to be very unhappy. So it was kind of like, I just have to somehow get to all these people.
So she was blowing you off. She was saying that it was your fault and you should be able to get all this done, basically.
Yeah, right.
Okay, continue.
And then more time conscious. I'm definitely trying to be more time conscious and trying to rein in clients who are very long-winded and off on big, long stories.
That's a very important point. California culture says interrupting is the rudest thing in the world. And indeed, when I had super sports agent Lee Steinberg on the show and Joel and Demetrius, the famous jury consultant for the O.J. Simpson trial, they both said that interrupting is probably the worst thing you can do. And yet I have found in the real world, while it's true that letting people talk makes it more likely for them to feel good and maybe even to reveal information they otherwise wouldn't, there really is a role for interrupting as a tool. Mm. I do it on the radio and I do it with my clients. And I do really think that as a result, my clients walk out of my office feeling they got more in the session than they would. And same with the radio. If I let everybody go on at length,
right.
My listeners, the caller would feel good, but the overall listenership would probably change the station. So,
right.
Yes. Do you interrupt enough?
Probably I should more. And the little mantra there is like, get to the point and keep to the point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then delegation is definitely...
Before we get to that, let me give you another tip. I say something like, I really, I'm pretending I'm you talking to a patient. I really care a lot about you, and of course, I only have so much time. So I'm going to ask you to be as concise as you possibly can. I do that up front. And by saying that up front, it makes it more likely that I won't have to be interrupting them and being rude. I'm I'm couching it in terms of their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
Okay. And then the delegate part, I had a problem that my coordinator was kind of not being very helpful. And I had many meetings over that. I do need a better situation with delegation, and supposedly that's going to be improving.
Is that an issue of training your coordinator, getting your coordinator transferred or fired?
Kind of hostile.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had numerous meetings to try to...
Okay. And when you've had numerous meetings, the chances, the probability, anything can happen. Maybe, there are late bloomers and maybe she'll finally get it. But statistically, the odds are, nope, she's going to be who she is or he is.
Right.
Do you need to orchestrate, either overtly or covertly, that person being transferred or fired?
It's not possible. That person is kind of the only one on this project.
Is it a training issue? Does he or she need training?
No, it's a weird personality thing, and I've been trying to iron it out and to get nothing but denial. I'm ready to apologize if I did something.
Okay. You are not capable of doing it for whatever reason. Is that something you've raised with your boss?
Oh yeah. Right.
And how does your boss react?
I guess not. It's not been effective.
Not good.
There's no consequence for this other person
got it.
To change.
Can you? What are the tasks you delegate to this coordinator?
Oh, it's like non-nursing kind of stuff that a coordinator could take care of. And I ended up doing a lot of it myself.
Right, that's my question. To what extent, if there was the goddess and the goddess were looking down upon you, would the goddess tell you need to do more of it yourself? You need to train, you need to just accept that this is the way she is, that your coordinator is? Or do you need to delegate to some other person who's more likely to be responsive?
And I am getting another person.
Okay.
And I have to kind of learn how to delegate more because for some months I was taking on too much myself.
Right. It's important. We all probably can do most of these tasks that we take on ourselves better. But in some way, the reason you're calling me is because you're maxed out. And so that you need to find some way to cut things back. So even though let's stipulate a priori that you could do better these tasks that you've been doing yourself, you're going to have to accept if you're going to make the trade-off. You're either going to say, you know what, the quality is so important to me that I'm going to work the longer hours. Or you're going to say, damn it, you know, even if the other person isn't going to do it as well, I got to damn delegate it.
Yeah.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, I do have to delegate more.
Okay.
And the part that is my role as a nurse, of course, I hold on to that. So that's what I need to spend my time on.
You've got to set boundaries. In the end, you know, when we see those commercials for, you know, you've got this emaciated kid in Africa starving, donate $18 a month can make this child live. You know, if we let every bit of the world's pain enter our spirit, where we will be dysfunctional, we'll do no good for anybody. Just like when you're on an airplane, they tell you, first, in an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first, because you're not going to do anybody any good unless you're getting full flow of oxygen. Same is true if you're being a critical case supervisor.
Right.
Unless you are okay, you ain't going to help nobody. So you've got to delegate, realizing that net-net, when you are in the grave, you will have done more good by delegating than insisting you're doing it all. Make sense?
Right. And the part about working longer hours, it is company policy that you have to get permission to work overtime. And I already raised the issue about the workload, and my boss said, well, you cannot work more than 1 hour overtime per two-week pay period. Mm-hmm. So I thought, this is not realistic. I end up working overtime and not charging for it.
Right.
Which I've heard coworkers say you shouldn't be doing that.
Well, I'm saying they're wrong.
Well,
I'm very cosmic about it. You know, for what it's worth, you can disagree, but you're only getting my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I profoundly believe, and I said it earlier, that the value of our life on this earth is defined primarily by how much we produce. As long as we're making enough money to make a living, if we're ending up having to put another 5 or 10 hours, call it volunteer work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think your coworkers are dead wrong. You know, I think that those are the words of, and I forgive me for being so direct, loser, people who do not have good values. You know, say, hey, you know what, if you do it, it's good. What they're really thinking is, well, if she does it, then that's going to make me look bad, or it's going to set a bad precedent. Those are the wrong, frankly, too selfish values. Your ultimate cosmic responsibility is to humankind. And I swear, I know it's sounding sanctimonious, but I also swear that is how it governs everything that I do in my life. I do a tremendous, this radio show, I don't get paid for this. And I have more clients than I know to do. This is not like marketing to get radio clients, career counseling clients. Mm-hmm. I do it because it's a cosmic sense that my life is more contributory, making a better difference by being passionate with you on this phone here on the radio than if I were taking my dog for a walk. So screw those coworkers of yours. They're wrong.
Well, I mean, I do stay over, and I kind of pretend that I'm not, but I, you know, do what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay doing that because I am paid okay, so I'm fine with that.
Right. I was amazed. Many nurses make solid six-figure incomes. Right?
Yeah. Many.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what we've now reviewed as, you know, a large number of options. What, if anything, is the takeaway that you are going to take from this and actually enact when you go to work tomorrow or today?
Well, I think being more time conscious and also delegating more to the new person who's supposed to help me. And then before I talk to the boss again about the caseload, I actually have a buddy from when I trained for another health education program. And she happens to be the case manager professor at a nursing school. And I've been trying to reach her. She's totally overwhelmed.
Right.
But eventually I'll have the conversation with her.
Mm-hmm.
What is realistic about caseload, and how do you really juggle all these people?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get like a really seasoned professional, bit that I can keep in my pocket. And then there's another employee who, is away from the job on a medical leave, and I can ask her opinion. And I think it would just help to have those perspectives from people.
I can see that. Let me add one more. I was originally a medical researcher at the Rockefeller University, a very prestigious place. But I was moved by the civil rights movement, and this was around 1970. And I quit the fellowship to be an inner-city drug counselor, and I ran these rap groups with half a class full of kids. Mm-hmm. And I failed miserably. I couldn't even control the class.
Mm-hmm.
They would run around the room. They'd say, "You ain't my mama. You can't make me." But it was a nightmare. And I quit with my tail between my legs, and it was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I would cry. I would be so invested in them. Because remember, I gave up this huge, incredibly prestigious fellowship to do this. And, mm-hmm. and now it was for naught. I blame myself completely. And so my way, because I come from a background that values education, it was a stupid decision, but I decided to go get a PhD in education from Berkeley to try to get better at that, which didn't teach me squat about how to do better at that. But even though after I finished my PhD at Berkeley, I chose to go back to the inner city because that was my original motivation.
Yeah.
And I went back and taught, and I didn't use anything of what I learned there, but I had matured. I was older. I was 6 years older, 7 years
yeah.
older. And there was only one difference about what I did. I was teaching, again, big, tough inner city kids in Richmond. What was different? What was different is I didn't care as much.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? My classroom was perfect. The kids loved me. They behaved really well because I was in control. I had this calm confidence that was and boundary setting. I realized I was not, the God who could change everything, but I had a little playful attitude, and yet I had clear expectations. But when they screwed up, I didn't get really upset. I just accepted that I cannot control everything, and my kids loved me. So the message I'm giving to you is caring too much can actually make you less effective.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Anyway,
yeah.
I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty
yeah.
Nemco.
Thank you very much, Marty.
I have one curious
You're
question.
Steering me
yeah,
to
good.
The nursing profession.
Cool.
I'm
interested. You said you went and got a master's, or you're getting a master's.
I already did.
Right. I've been hearing that is the key to increased employability. A master's degree, is that right or is that wrong?
I have to give you a devil's advocate side to that. When
Good.
You graduate and you're a new grad with a master's of science in nursing, it's almost like you want to hide it. You want to don't let people know because it's like you're a new grad just like the person with the associate's degree in nursing, although you've had all this extra stuff, which, critical thinking and extra research and stuff, but it may be an advantage in some ways, but I think that, this is my opinion, I don't think nurses should get masters until they've worked out in the field, in the bedside.
Yep.
I think master's programs should only accept nurses who have been working out in the hospital or wherever, who come back to get the next step up.
Makes perfect sense.
I don't like the master's entry thing. Just because you have a BA in something else, you're not allowed to get a second bachelor's of nursing.
Boy, that makes perfect sense to me. Anyway, MB, thank you so much for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Sure. Thank you.
Good luck. Take a couple deep breaths now. It's Sunday. Hope you're not going back to work for you. You can do something fun this afternoon? She's gone. Okay, well, hopefully she's doing something fun this afternoon. Anyway, you listen to Work with Marty Nemco. We are talking about, I'm offering 13 analogies and metaphors to help your career. I have found that people really do grow more from some simple, analogies, metaphors, fables. And next week, by the way, I'm going to be doing some children's stories, reading aloud, some children's picture books with implications, career implications, life implications for adults. But for now, I'm giving these metaphors, and I guess we'll go right back to the phones. I'll give out the phone number, though. If you want a career makeover or workover, I can't ever decide what's better term, 3-minute career makeover or 3-minute workover. Anyway, either one of those things, you want some career help, I can provide it here at KALW. The phone number, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. To the Let's go to MS. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi. So my conundrum is that I am currently working, I guess you could call it retail. I actually do tech support for a very well-known company, but they're retail stores, and it's not the right fit for me. Okay. I've only figured that out after almost 4 years now, throwing myself wholeheartedly into this. And I think, meant to be a writer. I got a degree in journalism, and I started to get another bachelor's degree in something related to, like, web design and technology, because I find that fascinating, too, but I stopped. And so now I'm doing this full-time retail tech gig, and it is draining, and it is...
Right.
It's emotionally hurtful sometimes. I deal with people yelling at me a lot.
It's the worst. There's studies that show in terms of employee satisfaction, customer service jobs are at the bottom because you're always dealing with unhappy people and you can't always solve their problems. And it's a disgusting field, and I couldn't agree more. I'm assuming you're working for the Apple Store or something like that. Yuck. You know, right. Writing. I have something to say about writing in journalism. I'm going to give you both a pragmatic answer and an idealistic answer, and you tell me which feels more like you. The pragmatic answer is become a tech writer. You know, you've got this tech support background, and you like to write, so you can combine the two in an area that's relatively robust in terms of jobs and payment. That is tech writing. The argument against that, though, is that people who go into journalism and love writing they find tech writing kind of pukey. They really want to do investigative journalism, or they want to write a novel or something like that. And so, you know, maybe it's just because I'm feeling idealistic today. I'm really in a good mood, and I really can go up and down, but I'm in a good mood today. So it's like I'm in good mood and also in the kind of liberal, non-materialistic mood today. You know, I would rather live in a basement apartment that dripped in the worst neighborhood and be able to write full time than live in a nice house with all, you know, with the normal middle class accoutrements. So the other argument, you could go the tech writing route, which is nice and practical, or you could do what I swear I think I would do. I think, and this may sound crazy, but if I were a young person today starting out, I'd drop out of high school because I found all that, you know, quadratic equations and the causes of the Peloponnesian War and trying to decipher Shakespeare, like, just not relevant. And I love to write. I am a writer. I've written 7 books and 2,700 published articles. I'm a maniac. I love it. It's what I was meant to do. So I would live with my parents. I would live with 7 roommates. I would live in a basement apartment in the worst neighborhood so that I could write full time. And I would write articles, books, short stories, screenplays, every genre. I never met a genre I didn't like. And if I had to live on, you know, on little money, and I would spend nothing, I would have a 20-year-old Toyota Beater that still was running, that could still run. I would get the cheapest healthcare plan from Kaiser. I would be eating really healthy, simple foods like, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables and tuna from Walmart, tuna cans, which are 50 cents a piece. And I would write, and that would give me the freedom to be a writer. Those are the two options, the tech writer, practical middle option, or the live it poor but write your ass off option. which of those two is closer to what feels right for you?
Probably the more pragmatic option. I've honestly thought about the idealistic write full time, write anything, and I feel like I don't know if I have the discipline for that, because I love writing and I have tons of ideas, but when it comes down to actually putting myself out there as a freelancer and actually saying, I'm available to do this. I'm capable. Look at my portfolio. I'm like,
you
should.
You're right. That's the magic word. Let's talk about discipline for a minute. Why am I so disciplined? It's not, it really is cosmic in its origin. It's what is the meaning of life? The meaning of life is contributing something. So I don't need discipline to tell me when I come finish this radio show, it's Sunday. I have to go take my dog for a walk and get his nails clipped. But after that, my butt is going to be back in my chair. I write every day, 7 days a week for Psychology Today. 7 days a week for PsychologyToday.com. I will be writing an article this afternoon before I go play with my wife later. It's not an obligation. It's a cosmic sense. Wow, I'm going to be able to write and get 1,000 people reading my stuff, making, hopefully benefiting as a result. I'm going to be writing a piece about, you know, I like writing in quizzes, one of the things I like to do. And it's going to be, are you you assertive enough? And it's going to be this quiz with great lessons, and there'll be 1,000 people who maybe will be a little more appropriately assertive. It's not discipline. It's cosmic sense of what's the right way to live. Is that the reason you're not disciplined enough, or is there something else operative?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I think it's just a fear that if I screw up, I'm going to be eating lentil soup every day.
That's stupid. I'm not being really direct. I'll tell you why that's stupid. I screw up all the time. You're not going to kill anybody. You're not going to cause anybody to lose their right kidney. You're not going to devastate anybody. Let's say your article sucks. It'll just get rejected. BFD. You go on to the next. I mean, even after 7 books and 2,700 articles, and I stayed focused on my 2 areas of expertise, career and education and life planning, when I write an article that is inappropriate for Psychology Today that I think would be better off in the New York Times or whatever, I send it to 20, every time, 20 publishers, knowing that 18 of them will ignore it. I will get no response. One will give me a nice rejection letter. And if I'm lucky, one will say yes. I don't even think for a nanosecond about whether it's good. Yes, I worry myself all the time while I'm writing. Is this good enough? Does this suck? How can I improve it? Oh, yeah, I do that. But once it's done, I don't expect, you know, success. I just send it out to 20 and hoping one will succeed, and there is no emotional attachment to whether I... Yes, I'm happy if it gets published. It's not. I've long gone on to the next article. Are you worrying too much about failure?
Probably, because I have, you know, bills to pay and student loans to pay back and things like that.
Then have a day job. Then get your, you know, then do the classic writer thing before you capitulate and full-time 50 hours a week become a tech writer, if you, I'm assuming, because you said you're gravitating more to the writing. Get yourself the stupid regular day job, whatever it is, drive a cab, be a waitresses can make $100,000 a year in tips. Learn to be an awesome waitress, do that, and then when you get home, make your, instead of watching TV, I don't know what you do recreationally, instead of watching TV, hanging out, chatting, going to the mall with your friends or whatever, say, damn it, I'm going to write 4 hours a day, 4 hours a night, from, you know, between 7 p.m. and midnight or whatever. You're going to put in 2, 3, 4 hours a day, and that way you're not worried about, you know, having to eat cat food, but yet you can still be a serious writer. What you think?
I think that's a pretty damn good idea, as long as the day job doesn't kill my creativity. That's the concern.
It doesn't kill. Nah, it doesn't kill. You know, even if I was shining shoes 8 hours a day, I'm musing and thinking I probably would keep a memo pad, which I keep with me all the time, in my pocket, and I'd be writing musings and thoughts about what I want about the world, about improving the world, from my interactions with the guys I was shoeshining, people I was shoeshining, and it would not stifle my creativity. You stifle your creativity. If you make your mind fertile, keeping it open to everything, and keep notes of everything during your workday, whether you're a waitress or you're a chauffeur or or even as a dishwasher. If a dishwasher job is mindless, you can be musing. You know, you don't have to think. Your whole mind, your mental energy space, your whole mind's energy can be devoted toward thinking about what you're going to write when you get home. Right?
Right.
Okay, what am I missing? I'm getting caffeinated. I'm finishing up a coffee, so I'm a little caffeinated here. Bring me down to earth. What am I not getting about your situation, or is this absolutely right?
Well, no. I mean, it seems like you're pretty spot on. I guess my conundrum is that because I've thrown so much of myself into this day job that I have right now, that making a transition so that I can actually pursue writing more frequently, and I don't know what that day job would be.
Anything, I mean, tech support is ridiculous. Tech support is ridiculous. That's going to drain you. That is unavoidably draining because you're one after, first of all, they're keeping track of the clock. How long is the mean time to resolution of the problem? So you're on the time clock, you're on the pressure clock, everybody's unhappy. That sucks. You got to get out of there. But there are many jobs that are not pressure jobs. At the risk of, you know, saying something that's really stupid, it's like, you know, some really mindless job. Security guards make $13 to $15 an hour. People who work, you know, and that's very mindless. Or you're working a night shift at a hotel desk. If you're willing to work a swing shift or something like that at a hotel front desk, it's very pleasant work. They usually aren't. You're just checking people in. Total veg time. I used to, when I was in college, I drove a taxi cab. I loved it. It was great getting to talk to people and getting their stories. And, you know, I love to drive. It's something that it's easy for me to do. I have a good sense of direction. and I can stop double park and get a piece of pizza when I want and a great whatever it is in Manhattan. Find something that's easy and fun for you to do, or set back. You can't set boundaries around a tech support job. That just sucks. That's terrible. Unless you're just a tech geek who just loves solving these. But for you and for 90% of tech support people, it's the wrong career. What would be the day job that you could, that does naturally build on your strengths, where you'd make enough money and not be burned out and can set boundaries, and so you can write your butt off in the evening?
That's a good question. That's the million-dollar...
Okay, we'll do it here. I'm not letting you off the phone. This is not a three-minute workover. It's going to be a 20-minute workover, but you are important to me, and we're going to do it right now. So Okay. Tell me a little bit about the building blocks of who you are.
I've always known since I was little that I wanted to be a writer, but I've always loved solving problems. That's what made me end up going into tech support.
What kind of problems do you solve best? By nature, without having to kill yourself, what problems, just like breathing, or do you solve easily?
Like if something on someone's computer is broken, or like it's they're confused about how to do something.
Okay.
It's the teaching aspect that I really like. It's not like actually physically pulling out pieces of hardware. It's going and actually saying, here's how you can do this, and then someone gets that look in their eyes where they go, oh,
great. So there are training positions. What if I said you are to get a job either, at an institute where they do training? I remember way back when, I don't know if they still do, there was some place called CompUSA, and CompUSA used to sell training. So that anybody bought a computer for $199 or $99 or whatever it was, they would get in-home training. They could attend classes in, you know, Microsoft Office or in the operating system, iOS or whatever it is. Should you be doing training?
That's what I like doing, and the only problem is that at my current job, they only let certain people.
Screw your current job. If I said your goal is, I know for sure that there are both online and in-person training for beginners, intermediates, advances, certifications, whatever. Your job when you get off the phone right now is to find out other entities that would hire a trainer and pay you enough of a living wage so that you would be free at night to write. Does that sound like a good goal?
Yes.
Okay, get off the phone. I'm really glad that you called Work with Marty Nicol. It was great talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Take care, MS.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Okay. You're listening to Work with Marty Namco. I am doing three-minute workovers on callers and sharing some analogies and metaphors to help your career. I had also promoted this week that I was going to talk about retirement. That was my second topic. You know, I was going to ask you 10 questions to decide whether you should retire. I may or may not get to it this week, but if I don't get to it this week, it'll get done next week. So, you know, you can only do like an earlier call said, you can only do what you can do. So, all right. But before I go back to phones, I want to share a couple more of those metaphors. So these are metaphors for landing the job. One that works very well for my clients is called the two gold miners metaphor. You know, if you're a gold miner and you are pickaxing in the mine, you're on this vein and you're tapping and tapping and, geez, there's no gold behind it. And you do it again, you tap on another vein and there's no gold behind it. And you tap on another vein, you no gold behind it. And so you quit. That's one gold miner. Well, of course, you're going to be poor. You're going to be, you're not going to make money. But if you are another gold miner and you realize that you may have to tap 10 to 20 times, 20 to 20 different veins before you can make enough, you know, find one that has gold, but that's still enough to make a living, and you don't get too invested, again, into this Buddhist concept, don't get too invested in the outcome, but you just say, okay, I'm going to do this tapping as well as I can, and eventually, you know, it may take 10, 15, 20 times, but eventually I'll find enough gold to make money. And like the previous call, let's say you said, well, mine tapping on mine walls is pretty mindless, so I can think about my writing gig that I want to do afterwards when I get home. But you don't get too invested in the outcome. That second gold miner, even if he's getting nowhere 15 times in a row, is going to make a living. So the same is true of a job seeker. You've got to realize that you're in the job seeking game, you're going to get ignored mainly and rejected most of the time, but you only need one job in order to make a good living. So think of the two gold miners, make sure you're the second gold miner. One more analogy before I go back to the phones. The deck of cards. I want you to imagine deck of cards is laid down on a table and you're told to pick one card at a time. And if it's the ace of spades, you land the job. Even if you had to turn over all 52 cards, you would no doubt keep going until you reach the ace. You wouldn't get despondent and give up when you turn out the ace of the eight of diamonds. So searching for a job is exactly like that. Usually within about 50 well-made inquiries, both it could be cold calls, warm calls, answering ads, whatever, headhunters, assuming that you're targeting jobs for which you're well qualified, you're usually going to find good work. The key really is to not give up prematurely or get sloppy on how you make those inquiries. If you're turning over the card but not really looking at the card to see if it's an ace of spades, you could miss it. Each one of your job inquiries you need to make like it was your first. Do it with care, not compulsively, but with reasonable care. You do it 50 times, the chances are you can turn up the ace of spades in a job. Give out the phone number. If you or someone you love has got a work-related problem, feel free to call in for what I call a three-minute workover or career makeover. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, back to the phones. We have Terry. Terry, welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, I'm trying to decide what to do in retirement.
Okay, great.
And I'm bored. I'm using Monster. I'm looking for jobs. I'm just looking for volunteer efforts. And I'm just sort of having a hard time figuring out what to do with my time.
Okay, can you tell me a few building blocks for... Let me do it this way. This is kind of fun. If I gave you $1 million right now, and I said you can't keep it. You could either invest it, donate it to a charity, give it to an individual. You have to get it out of your account now. What would you do with that million?
I guess I'd give some of it to a university and some of it to an arts kind of thing.
Great. Let's stop there. So would you make it an unrestricted gift to a university, or would it be for a specific purpose?
Okay. Yeah, I guess I would find purposes.
Let's pick one. Let's say I said you had to, you could give it to a department, you could give it to scholarships, you could give it for research, you could give it for beautification, you could give it for sports. What would be the most specific cause you can come up with that would excite you? You say, God, I'm so glad that I'm giving money to this.
This is a good idea. English language for foreign kids.
Awesome. Okay. So now we're going to play a game. It's called the optometry game. In the optometry game, you've never been to the eye doctor, and the eye doctor is fitting you for glasses or contact lenses and ask you, is it better with lens one or lens two?
I hate that game.
Well, yeah, because you end up feeling stupid after a while because you can't tell, right? So we're going to play...
Yes.
Exactly. We're going to play the same game right here, right now. So would you rather donate that money to for teaching English as a foreign language in K-12 schools or in colleges?
K-12.
Preschool or K-12?
Preschool.
Preschool, and would it be to a private entity or a government entity or a nonprofit entity?
Doesn't make a difference.
Good. And would you rather let's do it this way. Now we're changing games. If I said you have two choices, you can either volunteer money or your time to teach English to foreign language students, which would you choose? Or both?
Time.
Time. Great. What city do you live in?
Berkeley.
If I said that I want you to look up in the, go to the Berkeley Unified School District website, and I want you to find the name of, they list these are public, the name of a director or assistant director of English language learners, that's the current term for them, English language learners, and you are to email that person saying that you're interested in volunteering to either tutor or provide other, non-direct service support in the service of limited English proficiency students as English language learners. How do you feel about doing that?
This was an awesome exercise, but can we just go back for just a minute?
Absolutely.
How do I identify all those things that I would use that method for?
Okay, let's do it. Let's talk. I mean, all the things that you, explain what you mean. All the things that you use that method for. Tell me what you mean.
I'm with you, and what you did with the English language thing was very helpful. How do I find what else I want.
Okay, well, we're playing this game now. We remember you said two things. One was university. You start with the university with the million, and then you said the arts. So let's play the same game with the arts, and let's dig down and see what... So if you were to do something, you said, I would do something for the arts or with the arts. Let's narrow it down again. Let's play the optometry game. Let's see if we can narrow it down. This is like, for, you know, you're asking what this model, this is like a computer branching program. You know, it's, you know, choose these two and it branches down. It drills down. It's kind of like hot and cold also when you were a kid in the forest and you're saying, is it hot? You know, hot, cold, you get closer and closer. So we're going to play the game now with the optometry game.
I'm with you, but I'm more concerned now about how I identify those two things. How do I know what I really want? How do I figure out what's important to me?
Well,
and I guess I never have. I never did that.
That's, but these games like the million, you know, what would you do with the million is a facilitating question. There are various other versions of the question, like if you had 6 months to live, what would you do? There are versions like what have you, then you could look in your past and say, where have you really become lost consciousness of time? What have been your most rewarding moments? You know, these are the, you know, what is your very best skill? Because you may want to apply it to something that you're naturally good at. All of those are all good questions. For purposes of the radio, I'm taking one of them and drilling down so that you come off this phone call with something specific to investigate. And remember that just because these are initial areas to investigate, you may find that some side paths that you may not have thought of. Maybe, for example, as you're looking through the Berkeley Unified School District website, you may find that even more interesting than English language learners is gifted kids, because now the programs have been basically eliminated for gifted kids, yet they have so much high potential. You may say, darn it, you know what? I'm going to become a mentor to gifted kids. Who knows? But giving you something to get off the phone with a, something concrete starts you on the path rather than when you started this phone call. It's like, I don't know what the hell I want to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's very good.
Let's continue. Good. I'm not letting you off the phone. So let's play the arts. Let's go down the arts. Let's go down the arts path.
Well, I'm not going to be able to do it this quickly. I mean, this requires some...
Yes, we're doing a starting place. We're demonstrating a method. I've given you now six different questions that you could, when you get off the phone, reflect on. I'm certainly not asking you to decide on anything now. The goal here is my obligation primarily is to my listeners. And so I'm presenting this as a model for getting clear about what you want to do. And using your specifics as an example, not expecting you're going to have the answer by the time we get off this phone, but this exploration that we're doing has generalizability to my listeners. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so let's play a little bit, you know, with the arts game. First of all, let me repeat those. You asked what other methods there are for identifying what you want. I'll repeat them more slowly so that everybody's got it. You can look to your past and say, where were the moments that I was most engaged? What are my best skills? What have been my best accomplishments? What were the skills that were embedded in that? And might I want to use those in different context? Then there is in the examples, we don't have to stay mired in the past, because very often in retirement, we get a chance to be freed from the shackles of our past and do something completely different, which is why I was prospective in my questioning using the $1 million. What would you do? I didn't ask you, what did you do with your previous donations? I said, what would you do? And so you identified two areas. We then drill down using this hot and cold game, which I call the optometry game, to identify something specific for you to initially investigate. But there are many other kind of trigger questions other than what would you do with a million, like what would you do if you had 6 months to live, or what makes you angry when you know what are the things that create most emotion, what create most joy. We all move to action more by emotion than by rational fact. So by looking at what has triggered emotions for you recently, there may be clues there. But for today, for this limited time we have, I'm choosing to drill down using the university metaphor. And so what I want to do now is play our optometry game with the arts. Okay, so is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So would you rather be, is there a particular art form rather than choice? Is it a particular art form or age group that you're mainly interested in with regard to the arts?
Dance,
great. And because you said you were interested in preschool for language, are you also interested in dance for preschool for very young children or not necessarily?
No, the rationale for preschool was that I thought it could do more good.
And that's, you're absolutely right. Just wanted to double check. You're absolutely right. So what kind of dance, what kind of population?
Modern dance for anyone.
Do you want to, now remember, not everything has to be volunteer work. Do you want to take a dance class or do you want to fund some kind of modern dance entity?
I think fund the entity would be more.
Okay, great. And you said in the other context you didn't care if it was private sector, public sector, or government. Is that still true with dance?
Yes.
Okay. And so my sense is where the need is for dance would be in a couple of areas. Tell me which, if any of these. Many people want to be dancers, but they can't make a living at it. So you could fund the career counseling sessions for dancers who want to make it as a profession? Or would you rather open a dance school for poor adults who would like to use dance as transformative for their psychological development?
Either.
Okay.
There's no difference if we're playing the optometry game.
Okay, good. Let's see. I think there are so many government programs already for the latter that you'd be, but I think there's very few that would fund career counseling for people who would love to be a professional dancer or make their living through dance. So if I were to argue that it's much smarter to focus your effort there, would you agree?
Sure.
Okay. So if I said what I want you to do as your first homework assignment is to, again, we're taking these little steps down the path. We're not committing to anything. But I'd like you to talk to some professional dancers. Maybe, you know, there are dance companies here that appear. I haven't heard of Alvin Ailey, and then there's the Masmewen dancers, and there's a number of, you know, dance troupes. And there may be a class, or maybe that's what I would do. I might visit a class for professional dancers, and afterwards talk to them and say, what are your unmet needs? How could I help you go, other than giving you a job, how could I go about helping you find employment? And their answers will give you a clearer idea of what you might want to donate in terms of your time or your money. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Great idea.
So we've come up with two ideas on the English, the Berklee Unified School District English Language Learner. You're going to go attend a class for advanced dancers and see what, if anything, you might do. So you've started the phone call completely clueless. At least we have two good starting places now for what, Terry, you might do in retirement. Does that make sense?
This sounds great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Okay. So we only have a couple minutes left, and yes, we're never going to get to the to the retirement options that we'll do next week. How to do this 10 questions on should you retire? I want to offer a couple more metaphors. I only have time for one. So I promised at the top of the show that I would also offer metaphors for that are useful in succeeding on the job. One that I like is called the Peter Pan metaphor. There really are many people who just won't grow up. Unconsciously, they want to be irresponsible. They want to play. Even though that means they're going to make less difference in the world, less money, whatever, actually feel kind of crappy about themselves being a kid, all I can ask you to do is to make the decision consciously. Is it time to remain as a Peter Pan who won't grow up or to become an adult? So that Peter Pan metaphor works pretty well. And I guess I have time for one more. I like this one. I've used this before on the radio, but it's great. The steak over sizzle. There are many people who, instead of working to improve their competency or their attitude, they focus on networking, looking attractive. They're focusing on the sizzle rather than the steak. Ultimately, you will feel better about yourself, and you will make a bigger contribution if you focus more on your steak than your sizzle. Okay, I got to do one more. Can't help it. The drug addict metaphor. Drug addicts choose the short-term pleasure of getting high, even though their drug use affects their brain function. The data is getting ever clearer about that. Even casual use does. Even though it totally affects their functioning, their career, their personal life. Similarly, procrastinators choose the short-term pleasure of postponing a task, even though that imposes a bigger price for doing so. We normally say, well, we're all procrastinators, but realizing that really in many ways it is a fairly apt metaphor, that in many ways the procrastinator is like a drug addict. They're really hurting themselves. I remember the most vivid memory of my, professional life is when I asked a bunch of college presidents who I was giving a keynote to, I asked them to raise their hand if they consider themselves procrastinators. Only 15% did. When I did it for a large group of unemployed people who I was talking to, 85% did. Procrastination is career cancer. You've got to try to face it, that it really is almost as devastating as being a drug addict. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Kevin Vance, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. Often we change not from fat books, but from simple stories. And among the simplest are children's picture books. I'm going to read a few that have implications for adults, your career, and your life. And yes, I will give that 10 questions on helping you decide if you should retire. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
For the archive of Dr. Marty Nemko's articles, information on his 7 books, including How to Do Life and What They Didn't Teach You in School, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, go to martynemko.com. That's Marty, NEMKO.com. Join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemko here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.